And hello, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and I have no quip today.
Yeah.
Came flying in here and...
It's so confusing because there are so many kids on campus now.
I think that's it. I was just completely overwhelmed today. So
Get off here, you kids!
Yeah. Get off my lawn. They all got here really early. I don't know what's happening. So Saturday, watch out, folks. Saturday,
that's right.
Gordon Street will be closed. So
that's good. Well, Gordon's between College and Stone.
Yes.
From 8 a.m.
Which is
to 6
as good
PM.
As closing the whole chunk.
That's actually... more or less accurate.
Yeah.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs and traffic discussion show. You can listen to us here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And, of course, you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today, we're going to be talking about the new pressures to make a NAFTA deal as Canada feels the apparent pinch of agreement in principle between the U.S. and Mexico. So what is it, a deal or no deal? Breaking news, we don't know. Then we'll look at what's going on in Trump world, Googling himself like a teenager in 2001. He's lashing out against anonymous sources like himself in the 90s and insulting the memory of Senator John McCain. What a week. And then finally, the Catholic Church, on a serious topic, is dealing with the fallout of new sex abuse allegations and the long history of abuse by the church around the world. Can Pope Francis make things right? But first, let's head to La Belle Provence, where Quebecers are going to the polls on October 1st. The election began this past week, and it's not as... I mean, it's not as big because it was this time because there wasn't a minority government that fell, so it's not kind of as dramatic. The PQ is kind of an also-ran. I completely forgot that Pierre-Carl Palladio was the leader of the PQ.
Oh, yeah, that came
like
and went.
A year.
Yeah, that came and went really fast.
Because he was kind of the lightning rod that you can almost pin the defeat of the PQ last time on him. Not entirely, but for, you know, in a very particular way, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like it's going to be a contest between Philippe Couillard, the present premier and the leader of the Liberal Party, and François Legault, who is the leader of the CAQ.
Yeah, the Quebec politics are very different from us, Ontario in particular, but the rest of Canada. Kind of unique. They have a heck of a lot more parties. I think it's 18 in all. And they have there's four of the fringe parties, which includes the Greens in Quebec, that are in the double digits. So it's a province where people are more willing to, let's just say, take a chance on other parties rather than the usual two. Let's say we have in Ontario with the occasional foray into the NDP. There is no NDP in Quebec, and there is no...
Not provincially.
And there's no Conservative Party either. The Conservative Party... it's not really official, but the CAQ. What is CAQ? What's the breakdown again?
Coalition Avenir de Quebec.
Is essentially a Conservative Party. And as we saw in Ontario, after X number of years of the Wynne government, the Liberals were let go and Conservatives elected. It's sounding like or looking like the possibility is happening or is going to happen in Quebec of that because the Couillard government's been in for 15 years.
Well,
and
with
Liberal.
A PQ break.
But that was like a hiccup, let's call it, or just a slight pause.
Right.
The polls seem to get, we know how polls roll, but the thing about Quebec is that there are so many, well, not wild cards, but the PQ, who were once the most significant party, are pretty much down to a rump now and may possibly, I don't know if they'll lose official status, but they're sort of... In the basement compared to where they used to be. And then, of course, on the, let's say, the left-hand side, there's the up-and-comers, the Quebec Solidaire, who have, I think it's currently two seats?
They have three.
Three.
I looked it up. Yeah, it's weird because there hasn't been too terribly much movement. It seems like any seat a party has lost, they've kind of gained somewhere else because in 2014, the Liberals won 70. They now have 68. Or at the dissolution of the legislature, they had 68. PQ had 30. in 2014, and they just had ended the legislature with 28, and the CAQ was down from 22 to 21. So it seems like the province is pretty confident in where they rank the parties. The thing about CAQ, it's been noted that Galt is kind of hitting the populist side of things pretty hard, because Couillard is seen as more cool, level-headed, pragmatic. Mm-hmm. Although, speaking of the Parti Québécois, Jean-François Lisée, who is the leader of the PQ, said that Le Galt will lead the province into a financial black hole, and that Le Galt has a calculator where his heart should be. One would think someone like a with a calculator where his heart should be would probably be just good enough at finances to not lead the province into a financial black hole. But, I mean, maybe this is indicative of how, you know, out in the wild the PQ is right now, because support for, you know, Quebec language and cultural provision is, like, in terms of, like, the most important issue, that's at an all-time low. The French as the official language, the support for making that a primary issue is at an all-time low. The biggest issue people have is healthcare, which is something the Liberals are vulnerable on. It's not even the economy. The economy is the third place issue in terms of where the most important issue for people. It's number three. So,
yeah, and the PQ, there was a candidate stirred up a bit of controversy this week who said something to the effect of, Islam should be banned like we ban pit bulls. So they've got some wild card
people. Can't imagine why that would be controversial.
Yeah, exactly. So, and of course, the comment was, yeah, they probably should have vetted their candidates a bit better. So, it makes you wonder.
There's always a bozo eruption from time to time.
For sure. But it makes you wonder, like, you know, the caliber of candidates they're running compared to the past when they were the party. When was the first election? 76? Yeah, and as I said, the CAQ are kind of tacking right. They want to cut the public service a bit. They've made comments like, we want more jobs and less immigration, which is total dog whistle, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
But straight up. And you were talking about French there. The CAQ are saying that immigrants must learn French as opposed to, well, it's sort of an option. It looks like a lot of the young people in the province are leaning towards the Liberals generally. The one poll had the youth vote for the Liberals at 35%.
And non-French speakers, too.
And non-French speakers, yeah, because I guess it can be intimidating when you've got a party like the PQ, which is, well, supposedly the party of French rights, I guess you'd say. Mm-hmm. And some of the, just in sort of Googling around, like, what are some of the policies for the parties? Like, the PQ had one, it was like, we want a Tinder app for the province for carpooling. They all seem kind of like puff piece kind of policy things. I was expecting something a solid of some kind, but there was all these, you know, you would think the first thing that would come up when you Google this would be something a bit more, with a bit more meat.
well, I mean, they can't run on sovereignty because that's a killer. And, you know,
which is interesting considering their whole, you know, existence. Came out.
But I mean, that's been the problem with the Bloc for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Is they can't run on sovereignty anymore. And Nobody cares.
Quebec Solidaire had an interesting one. They're doubling down. They want more transit and they want no gasoline cars in the province by 2050. Now, I know they're sort of a lower player. They're fourth or fifth place generally, I think, in the terms of the popular vote. But they're definitely heading not far left, but it's probably as far as you can go within the realm of being elected or having more people elected. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, but they were also the merger, right? It was the Option Nationale. There was the two smaller parties merged, so that might give them a bit more of an advantage. I think they're saying five seats. I mean, everybody wants to win every seat, but such is Quebec. It's like they have right across the board. I think something that's going to become a big issue, which we're going to probably talk about in a little bit, is supply management. Yeah. I think the Couillard came out and was saying, you know, we will defend that. He didn't say to the death, but the tone was like, we can't let supply management go because it's probably, I think in terms of dairy at least, it's the most important for Quebec farmers. And as we know from the conservative convention, there was some talk as to whether there were people that had, I think we talked about this last week, there was people that had signed up, you know, the sort of conservatives of convenience to vote for Scheer as opposed to Bernier to keep supply management. So that's how big an issue it is. Whether it will become the issue for the election, I don't think so, but it's definitely going to be on the radar considering NAFTA, or, well, we'll get to that too. Rolling right into the next topic, I mean, way too early, yeah.
Well, look what it says on Quebec license plates, Je me souviens, so it's, you know, we remember, so.
We don't forget.
Right, so, a little hyperbole, over-the-top language is to be expected. Mm-hmm. You characterize as maybe people are sick of the Liberals after 15 years, and I think the reason to expect that maybe things will turn out differently in Quebec versus Ontario is, first of all, there was that breather, the PQ, people remembered. And then a lot of people, granted, it's not going to be as easier for the Liberals this time because a lot of people were chinned up about the PQ in 2014.
But it was like Marois called that snap election, right? And then lost, unexpectedly lost.
Yeah.
And it was one of the NACAB was one of the big issues.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure we talked about it way back then.
Yeah. All correct.
check.
But the thing about Couillard is that the CAQ, there's been a couple of like individual scandals. The head of the party who was also running in one of the ridings, Stéphane Lambionnec, worked for a firm called TechBox, where it was operating outside of Quebec and was lending money at very, very high rates. So it could be argued that they were taking advantage of people, and he, I believe he stepped aside. I can't 100% remember, but the other scandal, which is breaking or broke today, involves, a candidate whose name I'm trying to scan quickly here in the article I have open.
What is it about Thursday? The story will break.
His name is, Eric Kerr. He accepted a $55,000 loan from the mayor of Ancienne Lorette, which is being seen as a conflict of interest. So people remember that Liberals in 2012, people were kind of fed up with them because there was the stink of that corruption, mm-hmm. the construction and NLC-Lavalin all over that. And that's why people kind of swung for the PQ, you know, despite the fact that people care less and less about sovereignty. So if you're coming into this election and it's a week old and you kind of have two kind of stinky corruption stories on two different candidates, including the head of the party or the president of the party, especially when the latest poll from Léger has you 5 points ahead of the Liberals with a 4.08 margin of error, you can't really spare a couple of percentage points on penny ante scandals like this. So, it's going to be as difficult as it is for Collier, it's equally difficult for Legault, especially if this is just the first week of the campaign and he's got two sort of relatively minor financial scandals already in the works.
Yeah, and it almost sounds like third party campaigning, which is. Or at least third-party influence. Quebec has very strict rules about who can give to elections and that, but you can't, you know, third parties can't influence or campaign specifically for people. So a loan like that sounds a bit kind of sketch. Even though they're not a union or a corporation or whatever, it's still like, smells bad. Mm-hmm. So will it stick? Who knows?
Well, I mean, this is one to watch, and unfortunately, it's unfolding at the same time our local elections are unfolding.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we might.
What is the what is the actual election? It's not the first, is it?
It's October 1st.
Yeah, so it's like a really short campaign period.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also worth noting too. I mean, because Quebec is probably a lot like Ontario in that it's the last week of summer, so people probably aren't paying too terribly close attention to politics too. So, I mean, I would expect Couillard's numbers to probably pick up as we get closer to election day, but we'll see.
And if the story starts to pick up before then, we will definitely tackle it again.
Yes. Although we'll get into that in a bit. So happening now, free trade negotiations. The latest is that there's still no deal. Chrystia Freeland's been coming out rather regularly to give updates, and currently, it sounds like they're going to be working all night to try and reach an agreement. The reason for this sounds really bad because the American Congress has a 90-day review period. So if they get it done by tomorrow, Congress will be able to rubber stamp it before December the 1st, which is when the new government of Mexico, led by Andrés Manuel López Obrador, or AMLO. We'll stick with AMLO because it's short and punchy. But that's when he takes office. And I actually watched this announcement on Monday live. And
what was that? Trump on the phone?
Trump on the phone.
Oh.
There's, you know what?
I saw the 2-minute version. I was like, it was hilarious.
The 2-minute version was... It's still like the full length version was worse, but the 2-length version
worse. I mean, yeah, but still
because
fun.
The last thing you want is like cameras focused on you as you and others listen to somebody else talk on the telephone, especially in Spanish while the English translation is over. I mean, it was just such a silly photo op.
And the messing with the photo. What did he say to the guy? Be useful or whatever it was. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, yeah.
I was thinking, is this an outtake, or is this like an outtake from a reality show?
It's, I mean, well, like, that's what it was.
Hello,
it's,
how are you?
It like, was what? Cheap reality show pageantry.
Yeah.
But it looks stupid.
We have a deal.
And he looks stupid. I mean, it's...
We have a deal on line one.
Right. And that was the other... that's the other false thing about this, is that it was being sold as a deal. And it was an agreement in principle because, you know, nothing is signed yet. It was just, you know, we've agreed to – the two of us have agreed to these terms. Now let's take it to Canada. And I think this is where things have been hyperbolic, including on this side of the border. It's like, are we going to get cut out of the deal? It's like there's no deal. It's an agreement in principle. So it's
– because no one says, are we going to get cut out of the agreement in principle? It just doesn't happen.
No.
But yeah, and that's the thing. Like the way Trump was talking, it was as if NAFTA was dead. He's like, well, we're not going to call it NAFTA anymore. We're going to call it the U.S.-Mexico Trade Agreement. It's not that simple. NAFTA isn't gone. You can't just overnight say NAFTA is gone. It's way too legally involved and complicated. You can't just kill it. And it needs, you know. And I was wondering, I'm glad you explained that about the why it has to be Friday. And I initially thought it was just because Trump said, okay, if we don't have this wrapped up by Friday, I don't know what we're going to do. But so there was way more to it, which is good to know.
Well, and I mean, Trump made a big show, excuse me, of saying, oh, maybe it'll be the U.S.-Mexico trade agreement. First of all,
right.
Since when do you want to work with Mexico? Second of all,
we're still going to build the wall. Yeah,
where's your wall? You know, this is the same group of people who last week were like saying, where's the wall after that poor girl in Idaho was killed?
Mm-hmm. Terrible story.
Molly Tibbetts.
Yeah.
And thirdly, Trump was just, had the press come in, and he was, while they were trying to get Peña Nieto on the phone, he was talking about like, oh, maybe Canada won't be a part, and like, we're not going to call it NAFTA anymore because NAFTA has a terrible reputation. And the first thing Peña Nieto does when he gets on the phone, he's like, yeah, we're going to move NAFTA forward and we look forward to getting Canada on board.
Yeah, because if I understand it right, Canada, the Canadian team, has been in touch with the Mexican team the whole time, if I understand it right. So it's not as if it's been presented as if Canada has been shut out, and a lot of that, I think, is to do with the way Trump is presenting it, but I don't think it's – nothing's further from the truth because there's way too much at stake and lots of overlap, too. It's not as if Canada's just been sidelined in the penalty box a little bit. I mean, they weren't involved
from the main talk, sure, but let's not forget that there's a lot of pressure from the states – who benefit from doing business with Canada, whom this is hurting, who like the NAFTA, the pressures of renegotiating NAFTA are hurting, the tariffs are hurting, people on both sides of the border.
And I had heard it too, that the newsprint one was overturned.
Yeah, a judge overturned that.
Yeah, so that's, you know, I guess small steps towards probably all of it being overturned, but it was like killing newspapers. They were laying people off, and I think some papers actually died because they can't maintain it when the new price of newsprint is that high. So
it's been a kind of a rough week for ideological driven, you know, legislative initiatives, because, you know, here in Ontario, the Ontario government was told by a judge that you can't just like cancel rebates, or you can't just change
the Tesla decision.
Yeah. So it's I think it's a lesson here when you sort of rule by ideology. But the thing is about NAFTA. And if you see the details of the agreement in principle,
it's a done deal. It's really good. No,
I mean, there are some reasons for optimism because it's, Mexico agreed to give workers more right to access union representation. Mexico agreed to include more U.S. built auto parts in the cars they build. 40% of those auto parts have to be made by workers who are making $16 or more per hour. So, I mean, there are some good things in this. The sticking point in Canada, I don't think it's going to disagree. Well, I mean, depending on the equations for how much auto parts and what kind of cars and all that. I mean, that's probably the easy stuff to work out. The tough stuff to work out remains the appeal provisions, like the oversight provisions on how decisions can be appealed, and then the sunset clause, which I think has gone up to 6 years in the agreement in principle, which to me is no different, and I'm not a business person by any stretch, but then again, neither is Donald Trump, really.
Ooh.
Yeah, I went there. A lot of business people have said, well, you can't have a sunset provision in 5 years because a lot of big businesses don't plan in five-year stretches. So
some kind of Sylvia, the five-year plan. But
right. And yeah. So, you know, is there a big difference between 5 years and 6 years? Not really.
Yeah, this is a completely arbitrary number.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, it's not auto is one of the big ones, but there's also a lot of other stuff in there at stake, like the duties on shopping. We've heard it mentioned several times in the media about the $20 rate for Canadians, whereas I think in other countries, to pay duty on something coming from the States specifically, America's has gone up, and so has, I think, Mexico raised theirs too. So when you go to the States for 24 hours, the rate is a couple of $100. And then greater than that, overnight is $200, and then greater than that is $800, where you don't have to pay any tax on anything that you buy, whereas Canada, it's still $20, which is really kind of lousy. So that came up. There's a lot of talk about that this week because that would make a lot of people happy. They don't need to necessarily buy things across the border, go and pick them up at a little depot thing, mm-hmm. and try and smuggle it back over, or like the scuffing up of the shoes. Also, I talked quite a bit about international property rights and
intellectual property.
What did I say? International?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. International intellectual property rights. It's not really a tongue twister. And investor disputes, there is a lot more beef in there. Let's say. I'm not sure if beef is on the time. Dairy is for sure, though, as we were talking before.
Well, yeah, dairy
is massive.
It's the big one. And Donald Trump, of course, makes a big deal about dairy. It's like, you're killing us 300%. And it's like...
Yeah, and they always talk about subsidies here as if it's somehow unfair. They subsidize dairy so much. They just don't call it supply management.
Well, they subsidize dairy that, you know, if Wisconsin farmer makes too much milk, as like almost all of them do, and they end up having to dump some of it down the drain, and then the U.S. will cover the U.S. government covers their loss. Not only that, though, but corn.
Oh, corn is massive. Yeah.
Massive subsidies.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about family farms. We're talking about factory farms.
Yeah.
So it's...
corn lobby's massive.
You know, you're looking for someone to blame Trump, look in the mirror, because, you know, you clearly don't have a problem with your own subsidies and your own protections. So, you know, maybe ease up on the BS.
Did you hear that, Donald? Coming from Donaldson. Straight to you. I'm sure he's listening.
Oh, I'm
I heard a great show out of Canada. It was fantastic. It was free.
Oh, my goodness. It was...
Didn't cost me anything. I'm gonna like tweet him now and tell him all about our show. And I put hashtag Trump on the tweet for today. So I mean, who knows? Maybe he saw it. That'd be hilarious.
Well, he does have a lot of executive time to fill.
I guess so. He learns a lot from shows. He said, "I learn a lot from shows. There's some good shows. So who knows? Maybe we'll be one of them." I doubt it.
I doubt it.
You already
too.
Slammed him about 8 times, so I don't think it's going to go over too well.
I doubt he would have made it through the Quebec stuff.
Yeah.
That's
in France, isn't it? No, anyway.
But it's I think, you know, this is being done, like a lot of the stuff out of Trump is being undone. It's being like slapdash. It's all bravado. You know, you have Steve Mnuchin and Larry Kudlow all saying like, well, Canada's got to make a deal or they're out and we got to do it by Friday or else. And you know, it's like, well, you can't really in 4 days, because Chrystia Freeland was like off in Europe.
I'm feeling sorry for Chrystia Freeland at this point. The pressure's on. Yet she seems, when she's in the media, it's like grace under pressure. Although a lot of the talking points just seem to be this, you know.
Well, I mean, there's not much she can say.
On the surface or whatever. It was like.
Yeah, there's not much she can say.
And what was it Trudeau said? We're only going to sign if it's good for the middle class.
Well, he also said it's better no deal than a bad deal.
Yes, that's right.
And at least that shows, I think that shows more business sense than Mr. Dealmaker, but that's, or as much.
Because it sounds like the show is Deal or No Deal. It's not The Apprentice at all, right? It's Deal or No Deal.
Basically.
Which,
you know.
It's probably more like Dragon's Den, but.
One would think a great dealmaker like Donald Trump would know that in a deal, everybody gets something. They don't get everything. I'm curious, and this goes to show just how little probably he had to do with his own business, that he doesn't really understand what the provisions of a good deal are.
I don't think he really had anything to do with this, because he said, oh yeah, they were in the White House, and it's like, well, no, they weren't really. Like, he's just saying, like, oh, they were here.
He's
making it sound like that they're in the Oval Office and they're hacking it out like it's
the West Wing. No, he'd fall asleep in 20 minutes if he was sitting in on those meetings.
Be like, film me and I'm going to be eating a Big Mac.
Watching Fox and Friends for the fifth time.
Good shows.
To go back to Chrystia Freeland, they fly her out like the next day, which is pretty good. So, you know, we're in day three of the trilateral negotiations. You think you get a big international trade deal between three major economies in 3 days? You're nuts.
Well, unless the wheels had already been in motion and it's just a matter of inking it, which I think may be the case.
I'm not sure that's the case, though.
Well, we'll see, right?
Because they were like
24 hours from now.
Well, because they were like, well, Canada's going to basically take it or leave it. And the major issues, the resolution, conflict resolution, and the sunset clause are the two kind of deal breakers for Canada. Unless it's like the sunset clause is going to be something like 10 years, or which, again, I don't know anything about business, but that would sound better than 5 years, or at least give businesses more wiggle room. But it just seems like this is indicative of how Trump handles all his affairs by the seat of his pants, making it up as you go, thinking it's all going to come together in a wicked easy manner because everyone essentially thinks exactly the same as you. And that's really not how this works. And that's usually where the wheels come off the wagon. And I think we're going to be sitting here tomorrow and there's going to be no deal. And then he's going to rant and rave about stupid Canada and stupid Trudeau.
They're dishonest and weak.
They're the dishonest dairy industry here, and they're killing us with tariffs, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to rip up NAFTA, and then we're going to be back here in 3 months talking about the negotiating table.
NAFTA 2, NAFTA 3, or whatever the hell they're calling it. Who knows?
Because at the end of the day, this is a deal with Peña Nieto, who's going to be out of a job in 4 months. Mm-hmm. Actually, less than 4 months, in 3 months, December 1st. And we have a new guy, AMLO, who is a trade skeptic. He's very protectionist of Mexico's energy sector, which is something that the NAFTA agreement hasn't really touched on, at least not in the press. And I looked around for a comment from him about the NAFTA quote-unquote deal. And basically what he said was, we need to have Canada involved. I want Canada involved. We need Canada involved. I'm protecting Mexico's energy sector. Everything else is negotiable. So, I mean, it's almost like you have two entirely different governments in this situation. So to ram something through, get Canada on at the last minute, and then get it all wrapped up before likely the U.S. Congress is out of a job and before the current U.S.-Mexico the current Mexico president is out of a job, seems like the highest flight of fancy. But we have to move on to other Trump-related news after our break. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be right back.
That was a band called Los Straitjackets from a compilation called Surf Guitar Greats, and that song was called Pacifica. And I was looking for a surf song called Pipeline, because we've had significant pipeline developments today. But that song was called Pacifica, because I'm very sure the people out in the Pacifica are very happy, or at least quite a few of them are, with what happened today with Kinder Morgan. Need to talk about at a future date.
What's that called again?
Surf Guitar Greats. One dozen surf rock instrumentals.
The name of the song?
Pacifica.
Oh.
Not Pacific, but Pacifica.
Oh, I thought I heard something else. Okay, never mind.
Caprica? No.
Maybe.
We hear what we want to hear.
We might. I know.
Does it sound like a swear word? Sorry, I apologize for not swearing.
What?
I don't know. What did you hear?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
Next. It doesn't even matter.
Near.
What were we talking about?
Trump.
Right, Trump. I mean, that's a good note to start off with is, yeah, the NEB approved the government of Canada buying Trans Mountain, but they can't build Trans Mountain now in NEB because the Indigenous people in BC have won their case. So there you go.
I think they'll find a way, but that's for a future date.
Well, it's not like government of Canada has gone against the wishes of Indigenous people before.
Da-da-da.
Yeah.
Speaking of gone against the wishes of
yes.
the entire human race.
So it's been a very rough days for Donald Trump. And we'll talk a lot about Senator John McCain, who passed away from brain cancer this past Saturday. Well known as someone who served lengthily in the Senate, was a twice presidential candidate, is well known as a maverick and as a statesman. Donald Trump, also well known as something of an adversary of Donald Trump too, which is probably why Donald Trump had the flag raised to full mast less than 48 hours after John McCain passed away, when typically it's you're given till when you're a senator of John McCain's stature, they usually give you until you've been interned to raise the flag again. But nope, not Donald Trump.
The flag flap.
I think. Yeah.
Do you think he just snuck up and went, I'm going to put that all the way?
That would require him like climbing
effort.
Stairs, and
he paid somebody to go do
and,
it.
Yeah, so. He gave
Baron. Can you go up to the?
He gave Baron a fiver to go up to the roof and raise the flag again. more than likely, gave Jared Kushner a fiver to go up there and raise the flag.
Hooray!
But I think you know everything you need to know about Donald Trump is raising that flag, not releasing a statement about John McCain's service. And then sitting there on Monday and meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting with the press there yelling at him to say something about John McCain, and he just sits there with his arms crossed, not looking at anyone, like a child that's been told to eat a spinach. I mean, that's Donald Trump in a nutshell.
Yeah, fairly typical. They had their, well, obviously lots of disagreements. I read one interesting article that was, and I think there's some truth to it too, like, for all the so-called differences between Trump and McCain, there was actually quite a bit more that was similar. I mean, he was pretty much a Republican hawk. It's not as if he was, you know, off message. You know, Trump definitely has his own little realm there. But in terms of the, say, the Republican line, the right-wing Republican line, McCain pretty much stuck to it, even though, you know, for all his forays into Saturday Night Live and being what seemed like a personable guy, he was still, you know, still going by the playbook. And there was one article suggesting that the 2008 campaign, presidential campaign, with Sarah Palin as the vice presidential candidate was what was the lead-in to this whole era of Trump that we have now.
I mean, oh, sure. Yeah.
It was early days. That's what, 10 years ago when we saw this whole sort of new, we'll call it the new direction, I guess, of the Republicans. I mean, Sarah Palin, again, somebody else sort of, I wouldn't call her a maverick, but she was somebody very much onto herself. An unusual running mate, I thought, at the time for John McCain, and yet...
Well,
you know, Palin and Trump.
Lieberman.
Yeah.
But
Palin and Trump, you want to talk about being on the same page. They're like birds of a feather, right? So I thought that was interesting. I didn't really thought about it too much because, you know, it's like, what's so long ago, 10 years in politics? But I think there's some truth to that, that whole era led to the current situation that we see with Count Trumpula. No, I don't know.
Count Trumpula.
Count Trumpula. I don't know. I just made that up, but yeah. He does. He lives in the White House like a... Whoa. Does he have his own cereal? I don't know. Where's my cereal?
I'm sure he's asked that question at some point. It comes after a week, too, where he's had Paul Manafort was convicted. Michael Cohen pleaded guilty. David Pecker, the owner of National Enquirer, accepted immunity.
National Post board member.
News comes out that he has decades of dirt on Trump that was just sitting there in a safe at AMI. Then Alan Weisselberg, who is the CFO of Trump and is the most important person in the Trump organization, not named Trump. And by that, I mean Donald Trump, Donald Trump Jr., Eric Trump, Ivanka Trump.
Eric. Beavis or whatever. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So much can be said about Eric Trump. Mm. So Alan Weisselberg is a sort of a key figure in all this in terms of knowing what the Trump business is. And he has now accepted immunity himself. So there's this legal pylon all over the place in terms of his pressures. And then this man who he doesn't like, John McCain, passes away, and there's the usual toasts and tributes and wall-to-wall coverage. I mean, when I left home today, the memorial service in Arizona was in full swing. Joe Biden was speaking. Of course, Donald Trump famously not invited to the McCain funeral. Mm-hmm. Famously, former presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama will be making eulogies. That's like two strikes. And so, like, for Trump, and third strike is just he hates John McCain and Trump because John McCain didn't like him back. So, it's,
and I think this is a sign in some ways. Like, Trump is persona non grata at lots of events. He skipped the Kennedy Center Awards, but he also, Barbara Bush's funeral wasn't there. Whether he was invited or not, I don't know. And you guarantee, was Obama at Harry and Meghan's wedding? I think they weren't there.
No.
But you can bet if he was president, he would have been there, I think.
I don't know.
Possibly.
It's
Ben Mulroney.
There wasn't a lot of Ben Mulroney. God, there's, anyway.
No, but there's obviously a family connection there. We don't want to get in too much in the royal family at all.
Meghan Markle and Ben Mulroney's wife are friends. So that's the connection. I think that royal wedding was fairly low key in terms of royal wedding standards, and I mean that also has a lot to do with the fact that Harry's now six in line for the throne. So it's not as Harry's not going to be dealing with world leaders in the same way that his brother.
No, but
will.
I thought he and Obama were pally. It doesn't matter.
Sure,
but anyway,
I mean they were friends, but when you're, Harry Windsor, the church is only so big. Let's say
was Trudeau there?
But,
I don't know.
No,
I guess we better not spend the rest of the hour picking apart.
No, I think that particular, particular type of ceremony is reserved for the future king, the future king's.
Well, you
brother.
Think he'd at least get to go to the after party, but who knows?
Well, maybe, but only Ben Mulroney gets to go. No, but
yes, we're jealous. No,
I'm jealous that people think Ben Mulroney is worth inviting things to. That's
all. Yeah, invite some real journalists.
I'm quite happy being a social pariah. to go back to Donald Trump, it seems like the pressure is getting to him. Because there's as we were talking about at the top of the show, there's this thing with Google this week. It's like, I just Googled my name. You won't believe the BS that comes up. And it's like, did you just discover Google, old man? Like, what surprise? Most people on the internet hate you, just like most people in IRL. Hate you.
Yeah, but I think in a lot of ways, I was alluding to before about the shows, he gets a lot of his info from the internet because that comment he made, and I guess we don't have too much time to get into it, but the South African farmers and how the white farmers are being murdered, and that's total like alt-right internet garbage, right? There's no truth to that at all.
Oh, well, it's complete garbage, but he has two sources of information. He has
Fox
News, which he can... I guess he knows enough about technology that he can program his DVR by himself. But then he doesn't use computers other than his phone, which he uses for Twitter.
He doesn't have Bannon whispering in his ear anymore.
So people
print.
So if he wants to see something, people have to print out a physical copy on paper and give it to him.
Dot matrix printer.
So maybe it's like, how long is it going to take to print that out? Like 5 minutes? 5 minutes? Sure.
That's really fast.
Five minutes.
Every 5 minutes.
We'll get you this Word doc in 5 minutes, and it comes out in the freaking dot matrix, you know. Anyway.
There's a printing press in the basement.
Maybe a graph. Yeah. that's the job.
It says White House News on the top.
Oh, good Lord.
It was me last time.
I know.
It must be important. So, yeah, Trump.
Somebody who should know that we're on the radio right now.
Oh, I see.
Now.
Well. Well, we just lost a listener because he told them off on the air. So apologies for my colleague here.
Okay, so our last... Oh, it must be the end of summer show.
Yeah.
Anyway, so for our last topic, it's pretty serious. So I'm glad we got the laughs out.
Mm-hmm.
President Pope.
It's like a president.
I almost did it again. President Pope Francis. Pope Francis the First. Oh, God. So much going on here.
The current Pope
went to Ireland last week. It was not a warm welcome because of the long history of Catholic stuff that happened in Ireland. But, I mean, more important than that, it happened at the same time. This grand jury report was released by the Pennsylvania Attorney General, citing hundreds of cases of sex abuse in 6 out of the 8 archdioceses of Pennsylvania, implicates over 70, actually it includes like 100 priests over 70 years.
And something like 1,000 victims.
Something like 1,000
victims.
That
they know of.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a perfect storm of just bad news for the church, and now some people are calling for Pope Francis to resign. I mean, granted, this is kind of like the hardball, hardcore conservative types in the American Catholic Church who see Pope Francis as too liberal for their liking. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, he's under fire in a way I don't think he's had to endure since he became Pope because of the seriousness of this issue sort of swelling back up to the surface.
Yeah, and it's not as if this issue is new. And interestingly, I'm not sure if people know about the local connection to this. There was several survivors of abuse in Ireland met with the Pope. And one of them was abuser who admitted to the abuse was Father Arthur Carriger, who was transferred here to Guelph in the early 70s. And there's actually a very interesting article online by Troy Bridgman, who wrote about this a few years ago, that he was an altar boy back when Carriger was in town. Now, of course, nothing happened with Troy Bridgman, but he, I think the, what was the headline? It was something like Terrible Discovery Ruins Story of Inspiring Priest. But I think it's, you know, the new headline should be more like Predators Destroy the Catholic Church and Thousands of Lives. This guy was never punished. One of the papers in the UK, I believe it was in the UK, it may have even been an Irish paper, tracked him down. And he was living in a I think it's a Laval house. It's for retired clerics in Toronto. And supposedly he admitted to it, but it's like, oh, I've got cancer. This is 2001. He didn't die until 2011. He died 10 years later. So it's the usual crap where these people are the method used to be transfer them, and then it was like, you know, put them in the retired home for whatever. It's like, is Ratzinger still alive? Isn't he? He's like out back of the woodshed of the Vatican.
Yeah.
Somebody else who also did nothing. They've all...
He lives in Francis's breakfast nook.
There you go. They have Cocoa Puffs together. Sure, but they've done absolutely nothing. Although what they have done, and I think this is just an American stat, is they've paid out nearly $4 billion over the past few decades. And I think part of the reluctance of the current Pope to comment on this is because anytime he opens his mouth, it sort of lends to the legal case where if he says, oh, yeah, it's all true, you know, these people did this. If they have any evidence of him saying that, then it's like they have to pay. And I've got a feeling that this is going to go on for so long, or maybe not so long, that it could potentially bankrupt the church. Although, I mean, they have billions and billions of dollars, but, you know, depending on...
Yeah.
Not only are they morally bankrupt, but they're going to have to keep paying and paying. But paying is still not enough. There has to be some equivalent of, let's say, truth and reconciliation. They can't just say, oh, no, we apologize. I mean, that one guy, McCarrick, out of the States there, you know, his punishment was a life of prayer and penance, I think is what they... assigned to him. It's like, yeah, just go. You're 81. You're too old. Just go here and pray and redeem yourself. He's never charged, right?
No.
He's never too old. If they can charge Nazis still, they could...
Well, not just charge Nazis, but like throw them out of the country and they're like
in 95
and they're like hospital beds, like having to throw them out with the hospital, or
they
throw the hospital bed out with them.
If proven, they should do that, and they should do that with these priests as well.
I think, if I may,
absolutely. Sorry, a little carried away there.
I think there's an element of sort of the Catholic tradition of. Penance, and you know, sort of an old-fashioned point of view that
10 Hail Marys and everything's cool.
Well, I don't think it's everything's cool. I mean, it's not like what happened to Cardinal Law, who was, you know, exposed in that in the now famous Spotlight article that the movie was about. Cardinal Law got a promotion when he was forced to resign under the weight of this, you know, he got a promotion. He got like a sweet job at the Vatican, and that's where he stayed until he died earlier this year. no one calling for his canonization, by the way.
no.
So, you know, it's not like that. To say that, you know what, you're gonna go away and you're gonna think about what you did. I mean, that may be light. You know,
it's super light
in terms of, you know, wanting to. I think when we all hear about a predator like this, we want the world to fall on them. We want a safe to fall on them.
Yes.
But yes. And I don't necessarily disagree with that statement. But I mean, it is – we're talking about a 2,000-year-old institution and trying to get it to move on a dime – it's going to be difficult. This is like an old battleship that has to, you know, if it wants to make a turn, it has to start like 10 miles out from the turn in order to slowly pitch the ship that way. And I know that's not an excuse, but I think the fact that, you know, you had Pope Francis start off his mass in Ireland with an apology and outlining all the terrible things. And we got to keep in mind, in Ireland especially, some of these things aren't old news. Like when you can, you can say like the Holocaust. Well, there's still people around from the Holocaust, but when you're talking about something like the laundries,
the wash
in Ireland, where they sent quote unquote fallen women, that was 1996. They closed up.
Yeah,
the
well, Sinead O'Connor famously ripping up the picture of the Pope on Saturday Night Live. She was in one of like a workhouse, washhouse place like that.
Yeah,
and it was usually for women. I don't know if it was in her case, but for women who were pregnant.
Yeah.
Just to kind of get them out of the way.
So, yeah, to get them out of sight. And then when they gave birth, they took the baby and, you know,
and
okay,
the baby
see you
went
later.
Who knows where. And, you know, the same thing happened here, the indigenous people.
Right.
A different setup, but similar.
And that's the thing, too, is like when as soon as he starts apologizing, he can't stop apologizing.
Right.
So, you know, to the fact that, you know, he goes to Ireland and actually starts a mass. And I mean, and. To the credit of the people, Ireland, there was like 500,000 tickets sold to that mass, and about a quarter of that showed up.
Well, because people were getting them specifically to not go.
Right.
There's people ordering tickets and like, I'm not going to go. I just want it to be empty. So
yeah,
a bit of civil disobedience. And I think that's what they need. They really do need rebellion in the pews. And or, you know, it's the immovable object, like you say, the giant ship like the Titanic.
Right.
That should sink, but they need to, in my opinion. But they definitely need stuff to come from the grassroots, or it's not going to happen.
Well,
which
Ireland,
includes people
I mean,
withholding
Ireland,
money.
Ireland is a powerful example because there was a poll done of Irish Catholics. 86% want it to be allowed for women to become priests. 92% want the church to be okay with contraception. I mean, something like contraception, you know, happens. You know, it's sort of a wink and a nod that happens now. But 77% want the Catholic Church to be okay with gay marriage.
Yeah, and those are obviously very high numbers that are totally contradictory to the whole. It's like 95% of Italian women use birth control, right? It's like you're a Catholic nation, but you're a Catholic nation, sort of like you are, but.
Right. I mean, the people are ahead of the institution. I think what has to happen is that they have to air the all the dirty laundry.
Well, that's it.
Because the AG of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, was alleging that the Vatican was sort of actively involved in the cover-up. They have detailed files and knowledge. It's not necessarily surprising, or wouldn't they be necessarily surprising. Well, definitely
it has to come from the mothership, right? Like,
well, definitely when you have an instance of them like beaming up cardinal law to the Vatican, you know, it's like, it's okay, cardinal law. We know you screwed up, even though you were actively involved in decades of covering up priests behaving badly. So at the very least, there was acceptance after the fact. I mean, and also because it was happening all over the world, too. There were very clearly some people in the Home Office who were just, you know, okay with everything that was happening. So I think they have to just dump it all out. They have to accept the responsibility. And then they have to. They have to start making these changes. You know, because otherwise it's just going to be attrition. You know, you see younger people going to Unitarian services, going to Anglican services where, you know, yeah, it's still an old institution, Anglican Church, but it's been much more willing to modernize. So to the United Church.
The equivalent of the introspection and, like, yeah. I said, truth and reconciliation and accepting the wrongs that have been done.
Yeah.
And the apology. And I think in Canada, in terms of in the residential schools,
yeah.
Who has paid? Every church except for the Catholic Church who was involved. So yeah. United Church, Anglican Church, others who were involved, the reparations have been made. Zero from the Catholic Church. That says a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, to cry poverty is ridiculous. They might have to sell a couple of Michelangelos to make restitutions, but...
Church of Our Lady, new library. Sorry, that's just me. That's just me talking here. That's
way to tilt it, windmills.
Well, yeah. well, we do need a new
nice
library.
Yeah. I've been in Church of Our Lady before. Yeah. Or the Basilica of Our Lady. It's nice in there. Okay, so we're going to wrap up the show. We have some quick business to take care of. Cam Guthrie will be doing his re-election interview with us on October the 18th. Before that, though, we are going to be having quick little interviews with hopefully all the council candidates.
We're going to do our best.
We're doing our best. We have confirmations right now from James Gordon, Eli Ridler, Dan Gibson, Stacey Cooper, Phil Ault, Dominique O'Rourke, Charlene Downey, Jason Dodge, Mark McKinnon, Anshu Kurana, Kathy Downer, Patrick Sheridan, Elise Butcher, and Indu Arora.
The naming of the names.
So, well, I mean,
we're going to name you.
We're going to name you. And so,
and thank you for.
These are the Keeners and very excited to come on the show. And we thank them. And we'll update that as we go along. And we'll hopefully be starting that soon. We'll try and keep you posted at our website, opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, @OS_Twitter. @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And you can find this and other past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can find me on Twitter @AdamADonaldson, or you can go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spanderbook.wordpress.com. And yes, there may actually be a new thing there this weekend, seeing as it's a long weekend. It's Labor Day weekend. Happy Labor Day, everybody.
What are you doing on Monday?
Monday, I'll be playing at high noon at the Labor Day picnic at Riverside Park. I was going to say Riverside Glen. Riverside Park, which
that'd
is near Riverside Glen.
Choice for the
Come
picnic.
By for a hot dog. I think everything's like a buck. And yeah, I'm going to play some classic stuff. I got the call up.
All right. Well, there you go. And Arun got the call to come in and cover for DJ Sounds Good to Me again. So he'll be coming up at 6 p.m. here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources. And we'll see you then.